Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Argyle Chat, the weekly Argyle podcast brought to you by Plymouth Live Sports Desk.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Argyle Chat. Joining me this week is our podcast regular, Jack Ball. Hiya, Jack.
Good morning. Good afternoon, even.
It is, yeah. Good afternoon this week. And with Chris Errington away, I've frantically been scouring the free agent market to make up the numbers, seeking an experienced, versatile, no-nonsense pundit that is not scared to get stuck into the real talking points. So a very warm welcome to Danny Salmon.
Oh, that's great. Introduction. Thank you. Yes, good afternoon to you as well, Steve.
And you've managed to commit to come all the way from Thailand.
Yeah, I have, yeah. Lovely. Yeah, the airfare costs a few quid, but...
The Herald can afford it.
Well, Danny, it's fantastic to see you here.
Thank you.
And congratulations on becoming a grandfather.
Thank you very much, yes.
How are things out in Thailand?
Great. It's warm, it's sunny, it's...
Right, let's move on.
Everything Plymouth's not.
Everything this country isn't, yeah.
So. Well, you're back in the country for a short period anyway, and you took it upon yourself to go to the game on Saturday against...
I did.
Leighton Orient.
Carlisle.
Yeah. Indeed it was Carlisle. Orient is coming up tomorrow, of course. What did you make in the game then, Danny?
It was a disappointing game, I've got to say. There wasn't really a lot to the game. It was very bitty. There was no consistency in the game, which was unfortunate. There were moments of good play. We played a poor side. I felt Carlisle were very poor, and I think that we were fortunate that we actually played Carlisle when we did, because there were times when a better team probably would have found us out. To get a 2-0 win when you're not playing well, you've got to accept that and take that and move on. I mean, I know that we've got one or two injuries to key players, but overall it was a disappointing performance as a game, but a good 3 points.
Jack, we spoke on the podcast last week and I said to you, do Argyle really need to get a win in front of the home park fans? They got it.
Yeah, and we said about how the point at Swindon would be a good point if they could follow that up with a win, and they did that. Ironically, it's one of the games one of the games where they've not played so well, and they managed to get the 3 points. Mm. They played some really good football at times this season, and not been able to get either 1 point or 3 points, but they did. That's a second win in 9 now, I think, and it means they're unbeaten in 4. Danny's right; it wasn't the greatest of games at all. I think Carlisle were one of the worst teams I've seen for a very long time. You know, I was looking at some of the comments after the game from Carlisle fans just because I'm interested in what they're making of it. Because, you know, when you only see them once, you don't know whether that's just an off day or whether they've been performing like that a lot, because they are down near the bottom end of the table. And I think there's a lot of pressure seems to be creeping up on Pressley. They were one of the worst sides I've seen this season, and they could be thankful that only one team get relegated this year because they were that bad. Mm. It's, if they're that bad week in, week out, they're going to struggle. But you can only play who's in front of you, and Argyle played okay. It was stop-start, but they did what they needed to do to win. Some of the players that needed to step up did step up. Cooper came in and did well. Towards the end of the game, a few of them, including Joel Grant, Cooper, looked knackered, looked dead on their feet, didn't they? But they ground out the win, and luckily Sarsavit got that late goal, because we've seen it a few times this season where teams get late equalisers and it just kills the mood. I can't remember what the game was. It finished 2-2 a few weeks before. But that was a late goal. So it was good they saw that. And for 2 minutes at the end, we could relax.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what was the tension like inside the stadium going into the last sort of 10 minutes or so?
At half-time, Carlisle, I don't think it had a shot on target. And then in the first couple of minutes, they hit the crossbar twice. And you thought, how has this happened? You know, they had not had a single shot and a little bit more luck and they could have gone 2-1 up. But thankfully, they didn't score and the game went on. And yeah, it was getting nervy in the last 10 minutes. They were forcing some corners, weren't they? Some set pieces. And
we were sitting with the fans and you could visibly hear the tension and the comments that were being made. And, you know, we had somebody that was moaning all through the game. They do get a little bit tense. And obviously, Argyle, quite a few games have conceded late. And I think that, supporters get worried about that as well. So I understand it. But you know, if we didn't get 3 points against Carlisle, then it would worry me because they were a poor side. So I'm just grateful that I've travelled a long way and I've seen a win at least.
And a couple of goals as well.
Yeah, so and Sarcevic's goal was a terrific goal. So it finished the game off well.
Yeah, you've seen a couple of games on iPlayer, I believe, as well. What have you made of Argyle under Ryan Lowe?
Well, I understand Ryan Lowe wants to play a certain way, and you know he's got a fixed plan in his head, and I get that. I think defensively, I still think we're struggling. I don't think we've got enough pace there. I just don't think we're good enough at the back, personally. I really don't. I don't think there's any consistency back there. Our distribution is not what it should be. We lack the pace, and I think that any movement and any good quality players that play against them, they're going to find it tough. And I think that he showed in the games that I was watching. I think we've got some really good, neat and tidy players in midfield. You know, Joe Edwards and obviously Danny Mayer. I thought Cooper, I saw him for the first time Saturday, and I thought he was a useful player. He's a bit lightweight, but got good feet, and I thought he played particularly well in the first half. Tried to make things happen, which was good. I was a bit disappointed with Fasdina on the left in this particular game. I know he has to do a lot of defending. Mm. But generally, I think we need to be better in the final third going forward, and I think we need to be better at the back. And so there's a lot of work to be done still. And just one thing to mention is that sometimes I understand that managers want to play the way they want to play. And you're okay if you can buy those players, like top managers play big players and they play a certain way and they buy players to play the way they want to play. The lower leagues don't have that luxury, and if you've got a particular way of playing and the players that you want are not there or they're injured or you haven't brought them in, then you have to adapt. You can't just be, you know, carte blanche and just do what you feel is right and just say, no, this is the way we're going to do it and that's it. Because if it's not working and the players that you've got can't play the way you want to play, you've got to adapt. And you've got to try a different thing until you bring the players that you want to play the way you want. So I think sometimes, you know, you have to adapt. And if we've got to play Ryan Taylor up front, you've got to change the system to suit him. Otherwise, you're going to sort of, you know, bite your nose off to spite your face. And I think that at times that might be happening at this moment in time. I do think Ryan Lowe is a good manager. I think he's got great attributes. But I think sometimes you've got to be a little bit more adaptable.
I think that's a fair comment, actually, because it is something that's been discussed by Argyle fans, isn't it, Jack? Whether Ryan Lowe needs to adapt more to the players that he's inherited rather than the players inheriting to his style and his philosophy of football.
The problem you've got is when we spoke about it in last week's podcast, so I won't go over it too much, is you've got two halves. You've got half of his, the players he's brought in, and he doesn't want them to play in a formation that he doesn't want to play going forward. And you've got the Derek Adams half that possibly can't play in that way. So you've got to find some common ground, because there's no point in playing a system for now, but then in January you want to start playing, when you bring some more players in and you want to play this new system, and then they're trying to catch up then. I think they're currently eighth from the table. They're doing okay. There's a lot to be worked on. But I would still argue, which I argued last week, that they still haven't put out their strongest team this season. Injuries and fitness has been a problem. And I think, you know, possibly you get Williamson in for Scott Wooten. You get Telford in for one of the strikers, possibly, and Danny Mayer somehow fits in there as well. Maybe Cooper goes to left wing back or right wing back. You start getting your strongest team and maybe things will develop and that system will come, you know, flourish a little bit more. Things take time. They won ugly on Saturday and it was refreshing to see them be able to do that.
But I think you're right. The problem you've got with that is that if you haven't got those players that they're not available. Danny Mayer's not available. One or two others Ameson might not be playing well, whatever it is. And you sit down and you say, right, well, I'm still going to play that way. Irrelevant, we can't play it because the players ain't there, but I'm still going to play it. You can't do that in the lower leagues. And players can adapt pretty quickly. You know, I've played for 20 years in all four leagues. And it doesn't take me long to change the way if I play right back in a four, or I play as a wing back, it doesn't take me 2 minutes to adjust to that. As a professional footballer, you just say, right, I can gamble a bit more going forward, I've got a bit of protection at the back, or my left fullback attacks, I'm going to tuck in and support my defenders. And, you know, if you haven't got the players to play the way you want to play, and it's not going well, then you look at the best you can get out the players that you've actually got available. Look at what their attributes are and play to their strengths until you get the players that you want to play the system that you want. Mm. It's as simple as that. And if you don't do that, you're going to go sometimes win, sometimes lose, sometimes draw. And then you're going to be a mediocre side.
Mm. Well, I think there's no doubt that Ryan Lowe is certainly in the process of radical overhaul, really, of this Plymouth Argyle squad. And we saw another signing announced on the day of the game, Jack. Billy Clark came in, 31-year-old striker. I'm not sure if anyone knew, but according to Soccerbase, that was his 400th appearance for in football on Saturday. Yeah, so 77 goals in 400 games. He only made a sort of cameo appearance. What were your first impressions?
It's an interesting one. I think I've said a few times on the podcast, I feel like Argyle need an extra striker. I don't think Ryan Taylor's up to the job, sadly. Lolos, God knows what's happened there. You know, Ryan Lowe said pre-season, if you score goals, you'll get into the team. He scored some goals. He's been on the bench. You know, he came out and told Chris that he needs to do better. So I can only guess that that's in training because he's not been playing in matches. So obviously he's not up to standard. Alex Fletcher, I don't think he's ever going to make it at Argyle, sadly. I just don't think he's good enough. So I do think they needed someone. And, you know, there's not many strikers. One, you've got a limited pool of strikers you can get. Two, they've got to fit in with finance. I know there are a few strikers knocking around.
Gary Hooper
that demand very big wages that Argyle sadly can get nowhere near. So I don't think it harms to have an experienced body that's been around the leagues, that's got an okay goal scoring record, that can come off the bench and maybe make an impact. I'm not sure he'll be a starter, but that is up to him to try and push that way. But in the past few games, when you've got like Ryan Taylor possibly coming in off the bench, there's no impact. You need players that can come on, and that's where I think he will be a good addition.
Yeah. Were you impressed with him?
Yeah, I thought he came on and he was very neat and very tidy. I don't think he gave the ball away once when he was on. I think he had a contribution to the second goal, if I remember rightly. He got the ball on the right-hand side and had an impact. I thought he did okay. I'm not sure what his position is, though. Whether is he a number 10 or is he a forward with another forward? I'm not sure. But, you know, he's an experienced player, and if he's an added player while we've got a few problems up front, I think he's a good addition to the squad.
And also, it's sort of relatively, what's the word? If he's only on a short contract until January, there's not much harm that can happen if it doesn't work out. So, you know,
I think he did enough in that in the sort of 10-15 minutes that he came on to say that, you know, he's still a useful player to have around, definitely.
And you need players that can push the starters. Yeah. And if Ryan Taylor and Clardy Lolos aren't doing that, then you need someone that is to get the best out of them.
Yeah, especially with the injuries Argyle are having as well. They sort of need the strength and depth, don't they? On to Leyton Orient then. Jessica Wigginton, do we start against Leyton Orient with Danny Mayer on the bench? Of course, Danny Mayer was suspended on Saturday. Argyle have won, kept a clean sheet. Simon Taylor says yes and keep him there. Lee Smith, really, I personally think if he played on Saturday, he would have ripped Carlisle apart because he's a great player. And Nick Tomlinson, friend of the show, of course, with Argyle winning and keeping a clean sheet on Saturday, is there a strong case to use the old saying, if it's not broke, don't fix it? So, the question to you guys, same team or not?
I will tell you this now, after watching Argyle, if we are in playing in the fourth tier of football, and you cannot afford not to play players like Danny Mayer, because one, I think he has got a lot of quality, but I also think that there were times when I liked actually Joe Edwards, but too often we went backwards and sideways. The only person that looked to go forward and try and make things happen was Cooper, George Cooper. And I think Danny Mayer, and I think that who you said that he would have torn Carlisle apart, I think he was right, because I think there was a lot of opportunities for us to have that drive going from middle to forward into those gaps, and I think that he would have been perfect for it. So, you know, you're going to be playing the next two games. Obviously, you've got Leyton Orient and then obviously Exeter on Saturday. You've got to give him a start against Leyton Orient, ready for the Exeter game. Personally, I think that I don't think it's a no-brainer. I think you've got to play.
Who's he come in for?
Well, I don't know. I thought both Joe Riley and Cooper played well. Joe Edwards. And Sarcevic scored a terrific goal. But you've got to... Maybe Joe Riley will have to make way, because he's a central player. And if you're going to play that system... And I thought George Cooper did really well. I thought that even though I thought he tired in the second half, his first half performance and his wanting to get forward, wanting to make things happen, which is what you need at the moment. So I think probably, you know, Joe Edwards might be the one to make way for him.
No, I suppose Edwards could move to right wing back if you wanted to make a change there as well. So,
it's Jack, tough. I think Cooper and Sarcevic were two of the better players on Saturday, along with Joel Grant. So the problem is, if you bring him in, where do you place him, as you just mentioned? Possibly one option is to move Cooper onto left wing back, because McFadden's not had a very good few games. Cooper came on against Swindon at left wing back and contributed, and then Sarcevic can play alongside him there.
But I think you're right, Jack. I think Fazdeen to come off, you put Cooper on the left hand side, and you stick Danny Mayer and Joe Riley. Joe Edwards. There's too many Joes going on here.
The problem you've got, though, which, you know, possibly one of the reasons Argyle managed to get a win on Saturday is because the opposition didn't know who to mark necessarily as well. When who are we talking about? When Danny Mayer's got the board, he's being marked by two or three players, and somehow, despite that, Argyle still can't find the space.
That doesn't give you any reason not to play when your best player. Just because people know how they're going to have to mark you. Of course, he's got to be good enough, and the team's got to be good enough for him to find space, and for the team, if they want to put three players on Danny Mayer, then there's going to be people gaps somewhere else.
And that's what they need to make advantage of.
And that's what he's got to do. So that would not worry me at all. You know, if he's available at this moment in time, you know, if he's going to prove to the Argyle fans that he is the playmaker and the star of our team, then you've got to play him. It's as simple as that.
And also it depends on, you know, we said George Cooper was dead on his leg recently towards the end of the game. Maybe
three games in a week is too much for him.
But I think if everyone is fit and ready to go, I think for me it'd be McFadden that would make way. Yeah. Cooper would go onto left wing back, and Mayer would play with Sarcevic in the centre.
See, it's interesting you say that, because we've spoken on the podcast before about that link up down the left hand side of McFadden and
Mayer.
I'm forgetting his name now. Something in the air, I think. And the good combination play down that left hand side. So
the problem is, McFadden's had a few games now where he's not played particularly well, and he was a firework in the first few weeks of the season, and perhaps he's been a victim of his own fast start to the season, possibly. But his passing's not been particularly great, his choices on the ball have not been particularly good. And yes, Danny Mayer wasn't there for him to link up with on Saturday, but he was the previous week, and it didn't make much difference. So if you're asking me which player on merit deserves to be dropped, it probably is him over Cooper and Sarcevic. But I do worry that Cooper, just three games in a week, might be too much for him.
Yeah, well, let's move on to the back three as well. We spoke about it briefly earlier in the podcast. It still chops and changes a lot. Lee Newson says, who do you think is our strongest back three? There's lots of chopping and changing. There's been lots of chopping and changing, and they can't seem to get a consistent back three. Brian G. Woodward says, get Ameson in and Wooten out. That would be my suggestion.
I would agree with that. Sadly, I just don't think Scott Wooten's good enough. His distribution was shockingly poor on Saturday. And I'm talking about passes that are unforgivable on a Sunday league field. You know, you're just trying to pass it 10 yards to a player and it goes off out for a throw-in. It's unacceptably bad. And I don't think he's necessarily an awful player. I just don't think he fits the system particularly well. Now, Canavan made way earlier in the season, and he's had to bide his time. He came in on Saturday, and aerially, he was quite good. Argyle lacked that somewhat this season. We talked about the amount of crosses coming into the box, and Argyle lose their man, and they end up conceding through a header. Canavan was quite good in that role. So for me, it would be a case of what's been suggested there, that Ameson comes in and Wooten goes out.
Alongside
Sawyer and Canavan at the moment. I think he did well enough on Saturday to merit his place. That being said, you know, a month ago, I said that I'm surprised Josh Grant wasn't playing. Then he got picked, and he wasn't quite good enough. You need a run of games. But what I would say to, in terms of the chops and the changes, they're not all his players. You can't bring in 20 players when there are so many under contract. That's just the way it's going to be until January, possibly until next summer, because I think Canavan and Wooten are both under contract until the summer. And are there going to be clubs that are, one, willing to pay enough wages that they want? You know, because after League Two, you get down to the National League, don't you? And if someone's not good enough to play in the League Two, are they going to drop down and still win the same amount of money? So they might have to either pay them off, which Argyle have done a lot recently, and Simon Hallett might be a bit reluctant to do that again, or you have to wait until the summer, and therefore you can't afford to bring players in. So it'll be an interesting mix. But again, everything seems to come back to this two halves of teams at the moment.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed with some of the players' decision-making. Yes, I think Wooten was poor. His decision-making was poor. His execution was poor. And I sometimes wonder, I mean, these are professional footballers, and you don't want to overly criticise them, because I've been there and I know how difficult it is, but simple little things of making a decision that you either, you know, right, I've got the ball, I'm not under pressure, I'll give it simple, and then, you know, the player tries to find a difficult pass when the simple ball is on, he gives it away, and now they're under pressure. And it happens too often. And I think that, you know, that's just a lack of ability more than anything else. And I think that that has to be sorted out really quickly in January. I think that we need to make sure that that back three or back four gets a lot stronger. We need pace back there. We haven't got any pace there either. And I think that that's another area that we've got to look at. I thought Canavan did well in the year. Yes, I do. But in the past, last season, when I've watched all the games, obviously previous to this, and any quick mobile players, we always struggled. And that's why we conceded so many goals in Adams' last season and the season before, because these players are just not quick enough and not mobile enough. And I think we need to address that. And I think that that's his number one thought come January. I think he should be thinking about bringing at least two extra defenders into that side that are going to help the rest of the side going forward. I still think we need to sort out somebody up front that can score goals.
The problem with that, obviously, is you bring two in, I just don't know whether they can do that on the budget, because they're not
seven centre backs. But that's something that's always been difficult, this level. And this is where I said last season, I wrote about it, and I said, it's great having a great stadium, but if you have a mediocre team playing in a lovely stadium, the supporters will not turn up. And you've got to find a budget to help that manager go through. Now, I know that, I think Jack will be speaking about maybe once, you know, or it was Andy Bacon said that, you know, the money that's going to be generated from the new corporate boxes and all that. Well, I hope it does. But you cannot neglect your football team and just think about the stadium. And you can't do it the other way either.
To be fair, what I would say in defence of that is they got rid of Derek Adams and paid up his contract, Simon Haller. He paid £150,000 to bring in Ryan Lowe and his backroom staff.
Well, that's his choice.
But that's what I'm saying. So they are putting money into the playing side of things, and they are bringing some decent players in. Danny Mayer's not going to be on a short wage. That is going to happen. They're not going to start spending hundreds of thousands of pounds on players.
I didn't say they should.
No. But what I mean is, I don't think it's all gone to the stadium and none's gone to the team. I think they are finding quite a decent balance at the moment. But you're always going to have this period of time, I think, when a new manager comes in, where it does take time to get.
They had the opportunity when Adams got promotion, and we had that lovely run with Liverpool, and we had Purrington, and we had the money from Nelson, and there was quite a bit of money coming into the club. Yeah. And I think that I said at the time that I would, if you trusted your manager and he's just got your promotion, why don't you give him a little bit more money and say, look, you know, you've done really well. Here's some money. Money that we didn't know we were going to get. I just sometimes think we're just sometimes too blinkered. And I think that we've got to have more of a balance. And I think if we want to be successful and we want the supporters to really think that we're moving forward with trying to make that football team into a championship side again, I don't think we've done enough to help the managers. But that's my personal opinion. People can talk to me about the stadium and about the debts and about all this, but when we've had the opportunity, I just don't think we've done enough.
Hopefully now Sam Hallett's come on board, hopefully going forward, that'll change. You know, James Brent was in charge before. Hopefully that will be the way going forward. But also you've got to look at Ryan Lowe, who's just come from a club that spent money they didn't have, and look where they are now. It's a fine balance. That being said, Danny's right, the team needs investment, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. And also you have to remember, the Mayflower stand's not been built yet, you know, so that money will be coming into the club. It's, you know, it's still too early to talk about investing that money when it hasn't come in through
and
the
also,
door.
Also, you know, Argyle's still eighth place. There's still a long way to go. They haven't got up this season.
It's not been a bad season by any means. One final point on the Orient game then. Carl Fletcher's coming back. I'm sure he's a guy that all Argyle fans will have a great affinity for, given, you know, he was in charge of the club at a really, really difficult time. Nice to see him back in management and given a second crack at the job, really.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him back at Home Park. I think he'll get a very good reaction from however many fans are there. He was in charge of probably the most difficult time possibly ever since I've been following them, since the early 2000s for sure. He gained a lot of respect from a lot of people, I think nationally even, when he came out and did that interview after he'd been sacked. I remember it, I wasn't there. I was only about 15 at the time. So I remember watching the clip. You know, there were tears in his eyes, and he didn't have to come out and speak to the media. And he did, and I think Chris wrote a piece about how he would always have respect for him for that. So I hope he's taken some time to go away, sort of learn his craft a bit more. He was sort of thrust into it at Argyle. Probably didn't really have much of a choice, thought it was a good idea at the time. Learned a lot, he's gone to Bournemouth, had a few roles there, most recently loan manager. And now he's ready to take it on again, and I hope he does well, apart from on Tuesday.
No, it is nice to see him back. He done well at Argyle, and I think that... Jack's right, he did probably take over at the worst possible time. I think the club needed really experience at that moment, but really there wasn't a lot of options at that time, and I think that he was given the opportunity, and quite rightly he took it. I mean, it would have been a miracle if he'd made a success of it with the way things were at that particular time. And I do think that he can go away and think, well, there wasn't really much he could do about the situation. And hopefully... You know, he's gone to a few places in Bournemouth, and hopefully he's learned quite a few things. I wish him all the luck in the world at Leighton Orient. It's a nice little club, like Jack just said, you know, apart from Tuesday, and I hope all goes well for him.
And Ryan Lowe's comments were quite interesting, that he made the point that Carl Fletcher was put on a decent wage at Bournemouth. He could have quite happily sat there, no pressure on his role, and earned a decent amount, but he's obviously got the fire in his belly to have another go at management, and he's left that sort of comfort of a Premier League Bournemouth side and gone to fight hard with Leighton Orient in League One.
I think he was player manager at the time as well, wasn't he? Which is always a doubly hard role.
You know, and you're not getting paid as well. Yeah. And if it's no matter what industry you're in, if you go and start a new job, you've got to learn and to try and learn that when you're not getting paid, and when you're also trying to play and when you've not done it before. And and we should mention Roman Lario was a big part of that as well. So yeah, I don't think there'll be any Argyle fans that don't wish him well after Tuesday.
Yeah, and I mean just one brief thing about player managers. Don't ever be a player manager. Don't ever. It's out there the world, don't be a player manager. You are absolutely in for a hiding. So just either be a player or quit playing and be a manager. Don't do both. So,
were you ever close, Danny?
What, to being a
player manager?
Well, funny enough,
you were a player coach at Torquay, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. And I remember when Paul Compton was having a bad time and there was a bit of a problem with Justin Fashanu, and Mike Bateson came to me and said, I've got to get rid of Paul Compton. He asked me if I would be player manager. And I probably naively said that I didn't think it was a good idea. I said, I'd love to be a manager. I said, I wouldn't want to be a player manager back then. And I said, also, Justin Fashanu has been a problem for Paul Compton. Now he's gone, Paul Compton may do a better job. Maybe you should just give him another month or so just to see how he does without the sort of millstone around his neck, which was Justin Fashanu. And that particular episode of my life, and that is ready for my book, because a lot of things happened there that wasn't particularly nice. And I saw how certain people were, away and backstabbing going on. And I should have probably just said, I'm happy to take it, you sack him, I'm there for you, and I would have been manager and had it on my CV and probably would have gone into management quite easily then. But I felt that at that time, I thought I needed to learn the game. I knew the football and I knew coaching, but I didn't know management, and I wanted to take it one step at a time, which was a big mistake because you don't get the opportunities come to you that often. So that was a big mistake that I made, but I was trying to be honest, and I probably saved Paul Compton at least 1 month. He got sacked after that anyway. So it didn't really matter. And, then I think Paul Compton brought in Neil Warnock to help him. And Neil Warnock came and sort of made his CV a little bit better, and then went off to bigger and better things. So, but... I had the opportunity there, but after that it was time to sort of quit football for a while, and then when you try to get back into football, it's almost impossible. So, that was it.
Well, welcome back to the second part of the podcast. Fascinating stuff there, certainly towards the end of the first half, Danny. It's great to hear your little anecdote there from your time at Torquay. Talking of Devon clubs, it's the Devon Derby on Saturday. Jack is rubbing his hands and very excited already, although you're wearing red today, Jack.
very disappointing. You stumped me. I didn't know what to say to that. I should have just come out and denied it. No one listening would have known that. I am wearing red.
No, I would have backed him.
I need to make sure I don't wear this shirt on Saturday. That's a very good point. Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, as you know, I've been going on about it for ages. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, Dave Searle, he says he wants to spice up the podcast. Can't think why. do you think the City game on Saturday is pivotal? A win and Argyle are all but back up into the top six. Lose and it's like snakes and ladders. Argyle are back trying to close the gap, albeit it's still early in the season.
Well, it depends very much, I think, on what happens tomorrow night. You know, Argyle coming off the back of a 2-0 win. If they beat Leighton Orient, that's great to have two wins going to the Devon Derby. Exeter obviously just lost 4-0. I think their second defeat of the season. They're away to, who are they playing?
Scunthorpe
on Tuesday. If they just say they lose that game, the two teams are going into, despite the league positioning, in very different styles. So there's a lot dependent on tomorrow night, but there's no doubting that for the fans at least, and Danny can talk in a minute about how players might see it, but for the fans at least, it's a big game. You know, I'm quite glad there's been a little gap because I sort of feel, my first ever Devon Derby was the Johnson Paint Trophy back in 2009-ish.
Yeah,
and there were police dogs on the pitch, and annoyingly Exeter scored a last minute winner. But it was still, to this day, my best Devon Derby because of the atmosphere. And when you play regularly, and you might find this in your career, Danny, in derbies, they seem to get watered down somewhat. Yeah. So I'm quite glad there's been a 2-year spell now, and I'm hoping there'll be a fantastic atmosphere. And it goes without saying that I hope Argyle win. But, you know, there's a lot of bragging rights to be had for fans, and we know what social media is like. It's going to be a minefield this week and the start of next week, I'm sure.
Well, there's certainly a lot of interest in the game. I don't remember a Devon Derby selling out 2-3 weeks in advance of the game. So obviously there's a lot of interest from both ends of Devon. Richard Sloman, let's get Tuesday out of the way first. But yes, next Saturday could be crucial, particularly if it's a heavy defeat either way. He says if Argyle lose, he will walk down Royal Parade naked. So there's no pressure, lads.
We can't lose now, that's for sure.
No, it's not complicated. Believe me, players generally will not be looking at, oh, if we got 3 points here in the position. They'll be wanting to beat their local rivals purely because it's their local rivals and the supporters are desperate. And back in years ago, it was probably a little bit more volatile than it is now because I think there's too many players that have not been at a club long enough. You know, we used to be clubs at 3, 4, 5 years and you had an affinity with that club and the supporters. Now, I still think you've got that rivalry. It isn't as intense, but with the supporters, it is. But I think the players will be reminded, I hope they will be reminded, how big this game is for them. And I think that Ryan Lowe has got to have that sort of mentality inside the players when he talks to them before the game. Because I think it's very, very important for the supporters. So I think it's got to be very important for the players. And I think that's the one thing that I would be drumming into the players before they go out on that game.
And it's interesting because obviously I'm covering for Chris this week, so I'll be in the press conference with Ryan Lowe. And I'm quite excited to see his take on it. As someone that's quite openly a Liverpool fan, he knows what it's about to have a close rivalry. Mm. So it'll be very interesting to get his take on it. I'm sure, you know, some managers will come out and say it's just 3 points, it doesn't really matter. But I'm sure, I'm almost confident that Ryan Lowe will be like, no, this really does matter. And I'm sure he'll see it from a fan's perspective. So I'm looking forward to speaking to him on Thursday.
He was asked at the Argyle Fans Trust, wasn't he, recently, at the open evening they had about Exeter. And, you know, he said that he couldn't care about Exeter, although he did add after that, or before that, that Argyle are going to win.
Well,
so it's a big call for a manager to come out and say something like that, especially when it's now out in the public domain.
No, it is important. I mean, the supporters, you know, waiting for this game for a long time. Mm. And, you know, it is a massive thing. I mean, I remember the days when I played for Millwall against Wimbledon and Millwall against West Ham. I mean, it was ferocious. Just walking stupidly, I walked from my house, which was only 15 minutes away. I thought I'd take a stroll with my family to West Ham. You know, worst thing I could have done. I mean, it's lucky that I didn't get recognised because there was mobs of people having fights in the road. There was police horses, and on the safest place to be was on the pitch. You know, and it was so volatile. We actually won 2-1. Millwall beat West Ham, but there were fights and there were stabbings and there was all sorts going on, but inside the stadium was electric, and that's what you want. You don't want the violence, obviously, but you want that drive and that passion that the supporters bring to a game, and hopefully the supporters respond to it. And, you know, I'm not saying that the players have got a duty, But they should realise, even the ones that are not understanding of the way derbies are, that this is a massive game for everybody. Irrelevant of what happens afterwards with the points and everything else, this is where you have to win the game, and you have to win it with passion, and you have to win it with drive, and you've got to make sure you give the supporters everything that they want.
And also there's something to be said for winning on your opposition's pitch as well. Oh. You know, it's one thing to win at home, but if you can win away, yeah, there's no, as a fan, I'm sure as a player manager, there's no better feeling. Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's interesting. I was watching the Man United-Liverpool game yesterday, and a couple of my closest friends are Liverpool fans. And before the game, there's a picture of Fabinho from Liverpool and Andreas Pereira from United hugging in the tunnel. And I texted my mate and I said, if I was playing for United and you were playing for Liverpool, there's no way I'd be giving you a hug before the game. I just think it sends out completely the wrong
Absolutely. I'll tell you, we were in the tunnel with the Wimbledon crazy gang just before the game. And there was a massive fight before the game started, because we're all sitting there and John Fashion, who was winding Tony Cascarino up, and he was winding him up to a frenzy, just like the Keane Vieira for Man United. It was worse than that. And then literally, Tony Cascarino had enough, and it was like one of those canopies. Well, it was all over the place. There was fighting, and there, and this is before kickoff. Well, as you know, we got out on a pitch and there was not a lot of football played. There was a lot of kicking going on. It ended up in a 0-0 draw, but it was absolutely volatile. And that's what happens. You know, the passions, you can't go around hugging the opposition before a derby or any game, any big game. I'm sorry, but you can wait for after the game. You can go in the bar. I understand the Europeans are a little bit different or the other. It doesn't happen here, and I would never, ever encourage players to be friendly before any sort of derby.
We don't want to see Joel Grant hugging
anyone. Not a chance. Not a chance. I mean, you want to wait for that later on when you've won the game, say, thanks very much, see you later.
Yeah. You know? In terms of preparation and a player preparing for a derby, Danny, is it much different to a normal game?
No, the preparation isn't. Physically, the preparation is exactly the same.
Mentally, it's
totally different. You know, you've wind yourself up to a frenzy at times, but then you've got to calm that down up to a point. But your whole mentality, for whatever reason, the adrenaline, everything about that game, you give another 10-15%. We always give whatever we can anyway, but honestly, derbies are very, very different. And when you're out there, you can just feel the tension from the fans, and that spreads to the footballers on the field. So mentally you have to be very prepared for that, because there's no letting up in derbies. If you really mean it, there's no letting up. It's blood and guts from the whistle. As soon as the whistle blows, that first tackle that you make, guaranteed, the first tackle you make, you want to make sure you leave your mark, and that's what it's all about.
And you know, I'll be shocked if any League Two player, they're not going to be playing in a load of FA Cup finals, they're not going to be playing in a load of Premier League deciders. No. They can't get themselves up for a game like this, and they probably shouldn't be playing football, in my view.
From your point of view as well, Danny, were there games that you look forward to, or the sort of fear of failure was almost unbearable?
No. Me personally, I love big games. I always have. I mean, you know, I obviously people probably don't remember me playing a lot because there's a lot of young supporters out there, but I always seem to do very well in big games. And I look forward to them like no other. And when you used to look at the start of the season, the fixtures, you always looked at the derbies, you always looked at the local games. And obviously when you're at Millwall in top flight, you've got a lot of them. You've got the Arsenal, you've got the Tottenham, you've got the West Ham, you've got the Wimbledon at the time. You know, there's a lot of London matches to be played. So there's not a lot of travelling to be done, and the supporters are going to be there in numbers. And it was the greatest thing you can do. And Jack's right, there is not many games that are going to mean as much as derbies, because it's not an FA Cup final, it's not a, you know, these big games that these top teams have on a regular basis. But even the Liverpools look forward to playing Man United.
And what about as a player, what's the impact like after a game? If you win or if you lose, can that hang around, that feeling of either euphoria or huge despair?
Straight after, it is really bad if you lose. I mean, you go home, whenever you lose, I could never talk to people much. I used to go and do my bit after the game, but when I got home and Sunday, I just stayed at home. I didn't do anything. But the difference when you win, you just can't wait to get back to the training field on a Monday morning get the plaudits, read the newspapers, and really, so it's just the bragging rights of it all. It does make a massive difference to a player. And if you've got two or three derby matches and two local teams, even if it was Torquay and Exeter, you know, although Exeter, like Torquay and Plymouth, is not the biggest game in the world, but it's still a derby. But yes, it was down when you lose, but it's euphoria when you win.
Looking ahead to the game on Saturday then, how crucial do you think the preparation is going to be? Because you look at the two teams this week, Argyle have had back-to-back home games. Exeter have had to go away to Cambridge and away at Scunthorpe on Tuesday, which is 1,000 miles of travelling before they then go into a 1 o'clock game on a Saturday afternoon. Is that going to have any benefit for Argyle, do you think?
I do think that Argyle winning Saturday, I think it's very, very important that if it was me, I would look at the game realistically. We weren't great and there were problems in that game, but we managed to win the game and we did what we had to do. Tactically, and the players that he decides to play against Leighton Orient, I think is going to be very important. I really do. I think that he needs to get what he really feels is his best side out there as best he can. And he forget the game Saturday now. Go training, have a look at the players. If Danny Mayer's fit and rearing to go, he's got to be included as far as I'm concerned in the mix. And he's also got to look at the areas at the back. Can he bring in players that are going to do better against better players? Because if Carlisle were better, I think we would have conceded goals on Saturday. And I think he has to look at that. It's okay saying, oh, we won, so don't mess around with it. But there were problems there that, you know, you think, oh, if that pass was a little bit better, or that run was a little bit better, or, you know, they could actually, the way they built up and they had those little gaps and they didn't take advantage of them, it could have been a different story, you know. And that's what I was looking at, not the end result. And I think that that's what Ryan Lowe should be looking at.
From an outsider's point of view, in terms of Exeter, what I would say is I would imagine that it would be quite vital if Argyle could get an early goal.
Yeah.
Exeter don't seem to score many goals, and they don't seem to concede many either, Saturday being an exception. So I do wonder if Argyle can get an early goal and sort of the crowd turn the home crowd against them, whether or not that will then put some fear into them and that will benefit Argyle. Whereas the longer it goes on, I wonder if it will be in Exeter's favour more. So I think an early goal would certainly calm some nerves.
Well, that's why I'm interested about the fitness aspect. As I say, Exeter have got 1,000 miles of travelling to do in the build-up to the derby as well. From a player's point of view, how difficult is
it? It is difficult. And also, you know, a defeat like 4-0 doesn't help. People might think, oh, you know, that might wake them up to play better or to remind them that this league is not easy. But when you come back after a 4-0 defeat, if I got a word to score early and all that travelling, you get tired minds, you get tired bodies. So, you know, I would go all out to try and score early if I was Argyle and try and take advantage of that. And when I've done a lot of travelling, you do have a little bit of time to recover up to a point, but it does affect you. Sitting on a coach or travelling long distances, your body and your mind really go to sleep, and it isn't easy. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, they're professional players and they should overcome that. But I think, you know, Plymouth Argyle have got an opportunity here. You know, if they can get 3 points against Leighton Orient, and Exeter, you know, might not do so well, or, you know, they've lost that 4-0 on Saturday, there might be a few doubts in their mind.
Yeah. I'd certainly rather be the team that play two home games rather than 1,000 miles, that's for
it's
sure.
It won't be easy for Exeter, but, you know, they're a good side. You know, they're not second for nothing. You know, so it's not going to be easy for Argyle. You know, I mean, and I think Exeter will start favourites, of course. But you know, you've got to look positive. If you're an Argyle fan and Argyle manager, you've got to be looking at the positives rather than the negatives.
Well, they've got a former Exeter player, of course, in really good form right now, Joel Grant. 4 goals in 4 games. I imagine he'll get a fair bit of stick this weekend, won't he?
He must be. I bet he's looking forward to it, though. Surely
he seems forward to it. The stuff he puts out on Instagram would suggest that he just loves that sort of attention.
I mean, he's put earlier in the season, he put out an interesting Instagram story of, I think it was Argyle fans queuing up for tickets, said, oh, this is what it's like to be at a real club. and this week he's posted a picture of his little son chanting for Argyle, saying ready for the game on Saturday. So, you know, Exeter fans are surely going to follow him. But for me, that's all part and parcel. If an Exeter player did that, why shouldn't they do that? Even if he was a former Argyle player, it's all part of the fun and games. He's in great form. And we said in the podcast last week, the best way for him to stay in the team over Telford and Moore when they get back is to carry on scoring goals. and he's done that. And one of the criticisms I've had of an Argyle team under Ryan Lowe, and I mentioned it to you on Saturday, Danny, and I mentioned it on the podcast before, is they seem to pass and then they're very static. Joel Grant's goals have come when he's passed and he's made a run and it's been picked up and he slots the ball home. That's what he needs to keep doing because it's working well at the moment. And I'm sure if he can score, if he scores on Saturday, I would be fascinated to see whether he goes and celebrates in front of the Argyle fans, whether he runs in front of the Exeter fans. There's surely going to be a story to tell there. And also, I'd be shocked if it wasn't him put up for the press on Thursday, so it'll be interesting to speak to him. I really can't wait. That being said, on Saturday night, I may dread the podcast next week, so we'll wait and see.
Jack's getting very excited here, bro. So I just want to let you know. He's sweating, he's got a sweat on his brow.
With his red top on, we should have.
But Joel Grant must be looking forward to it. Surely it's one of these games that gets the adrenaline pumping.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Right. Well, we'll leave it at that then, chaps. Danny, thank you ever so much for coming
My
in.
Pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you.
We wish you all the very best with your return to Thailand. Of course, anytime you're over, please come on the podcast. Jack, don't go overboard on Saturday, will you?
Well, I'm working tomorrow night first. I'll be live blogging the Leighton Orient
game.
True. So hopefully we'll make 2 wins from 2. And no, I can't wait to be a fan. I've not been a fan at Devon Derby for a long time, so I am looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back with more of the same next week. So thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
We are always happy to hear from you, and if you have any questions for our panel, please tweet them to our Twitter account @HeraldPAFC or visit our Facebook page, Plymouth Argyle The Herald. Thanks for listening.